You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
Good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is, wherever you are when you are listening. Welcome to the Monsters and Friends podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to the cryptids, legends, and lore that might not get the same attention as their legendary counterparts. As always, I am your host, Michael Patrick, and I want to welcome you to yet another week out on the absolutely beautiful open road. Barry has decided at this point that he is going to go and abandoned me. He is headed back down towards the cabin, and he told me that he is going to start recording his own series on stuff. So there's that. He'll be back around, I'm sure, but for now I'm a full-time one-man solo act. I just want to say that I hate the winter. Everything is so cold and you get so cooped up and you can't enjoy the world. This pod on tour thing has been absolutely fantastic, and I get to explore the countryside one state at a time. What an amazing thing to do. This week, I am super excited because I'm in one of my absolutely favorite places in the entire country. The great thing about the Northeast is that it's super easy to get from place to place, and there's not a huge distance like some other parts of the U.S., This week, I get to travel to some of the most beautiful back roads that you can find, and I get to drive old Winnie through the beautiful forests and hills of the Empire State. People always seem to forget that there is a whole lot more to this state than just the Big Apple. This week on the Monsters and Friends podcast, we are going to explore the whole thing. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to New York. We do know what comes first, though. Housekeeping. This week's is fairly neat and tidy. Firstly, I know you love all things weird and wild, but this week, we're going to go ahead and we're going to help out a good friend of ours. Another friend of mine hosts a podcast called Haunting History, and she's about to enter her third season. This season, however, she's taking a bit of a different take on true crime in history like she normally does. She was asked by a family to help her solve a 40-year-old murder, and she's hoping to do just that. So I want you to go ahead and just take a listen here for a second and see what's in store for Season 3 on the Haunting History Podcast.
Hi, this is Kat with Haunting History Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about what's new in Season 3. This season, we're doing something a little different. We are investigating, researching, and telling you the story of a missing persons case as we go along. You'll join us as we talk to detectives, private investigators, coroner's offices, file clerks, librarians, and the family members whose lives are changed by a disappearance that happened 40 years ago, and most likely spending an unhealthy amount of time on Ancestry.com. You, our listeners, are going to be with us as we get the case, and then as we find, meet, and talk to the people behind the story. We're starting the season with a ton of questions and zero answers, and we have no idea how it's going to end. What we do know is this family deserves to know what happened. Join us by emailing, messaging, and commenting with your thoughts, suggestions, and ideas. We want your help. Someone out there knows something. Help us find that someone. Season 3 starts Tuesday, June 11th, with the disappearance of Deborah Lynn.
Podcasting has become such an amazing medium. Someone like Kathy, that's done this mostly for fun up to now, is going to be able to use her show to hopefully get out the story of Deborah Lynn Kidwell and her sons, and hopefully can bring some leads and ideas to the family. Make sure that you check out Season 3 of the Haunting History Podcast. I also can't forget to mention my wacky podcasting family, the Straight Up Strange Podcasting Network, when mentioning awesome podcasts. When it comes to the weird, the strange, and sometimes the scary, you can find many different tastes on there. Think of it like the old country buffet of strange podcasts, except you won't contract any kind of weird disease from listening to these shows. So make sure you head on over to straightupstrange.com or follow us on @strangepodcasts on Twitter to find out all the amazing shows that this network has to offer. Finally, another call to you amazing people, the listeners. Eventually here, I'm going to put together a show about your stories. I want to hear about the lesser-known legends and lore that your town has to offer, hear about any cryptid or monster encounters that you may have had. You can either type it out and I'll read it for you, dramatically if you wish, of course, or you can make a recording of yourself telling the story of your encounter or this legend, and I will go ahead and put that on the show. Just send an email to monstersandfriends@gmail.com with your story, and it'll probably end up on the old airwaves at some point. I couldn't make this show happen without y'all, and I'd love to hear what your experiences are. But for now, on to the show. After a word from... But you know what? No sponsor. Their Dunkin' Donuts isn't going to give me anything, so let's get right into it.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York.
Alrighty then. Apparently so much for heading back to the cabin. Well, I guess welcome to New York. I've spent a lot of time in New York, and yes, I want to be very clear. When one says New York, everyone thinks of the bright lights and what old brown fur over there was just singing about, but New York is a big, beautiful state. Once you leave the concrete jungle, it's nothing but mountains, rivers, and absolute beauty. This week, we haven't spent much, if any, time in the city. Of course, to stop at Ray's Pizza. You can get absolutely lost in the city, and the only real monsters, I think, that reside there are the rats that you can ride like horses through the streets and sewers. It's really gross. Well, you know what? Let's also not forget about those mutant turtles that live in the sewer, but I'm really afraid that if I get into that, Barry is going to pop back up again and start telling us all about his quote-unquote documentary series. So we're going to go ahead and leave New York City alone for now. There's a lot of land to cover in upstate New York, so let's head away from the bright lights and noises of the city and explore beautiful New York. I'm having a bit of an issue with this first one, though. I keep talking about how beautiful and gorgeous upstate New York is and how much I loved visiting the state. This week was rough, though. For as beautiful as New York is, there is a lot that seems to be hidden up here. The first monster or lore makes me rethink some of where I want to go and would probably make me keep the lights on in Old Winnie. This guy is someone or something that has a very fine taste for some of the smaller things in life. Our first friend tonight is the cannibal giant, Hi-Hat. Who exactly is Hi-Hat, you're probably wondering to yourself, or possibly out loud. Also, where is Hi-Hat, and how can I go about making sure that I never, ever, ever see him or bump into him? Well, let's chat about old Hi-Hat then, shall we? What are we looking at exactly when we're talking about old Hi-Hat here? Imagine a person, or perhaps just a creature, something standing between 8 and 12 feet tall. Most accounts have Hi-Hat completely covered in hair, while others say that he's just a very tall, disgusting man. More often than not, he seems to be considered kind of a relative of Bigfoot. His mouth is described as being red, stained with the blood of his latest meal, with sharp, jagged, gross teeth. What gives him his name, though, and makes him stand out, literally, sits upon his head. He's known to wear a tall stovepipe hat. It's pretty rad, right? Imagine if Abraham Lincoln was taller, hairier, and on roids, and built like a brick crap house. That's Hi-Hat. Another distinct thing that will alert you to Hi-Hat's presence is the presence of some terrible, gross, disgusting smell, kind of like dead or rotting flesh. Some folks consider that to be the kind of the MO of a demon, so maybe Hi-Hat's just a demon. I want you to remember this, though. Nothing good can come from dead or rotten flesh. Nothing. None. Nine. Niet. Nothing. It's also been said that Hi-Hat, while seeming like Bigfoot rocking a stovepipe hat, may be somewhat of a shapeshifter as well. There have been reports of Mr. Hat appearing as different creatures, such as a large, scary spider or a really big bipedal forest creature, kind of like Bigfoot. Hi-Hat also has an insatiable appetite for human flesh. It's been said that Hi-Hat will abduct little kids from the local villages and either hang them up like fresh game or lock them away in a cave or a well until he's ready to eat them, which is pretty often, apparently. Hi-Hat apparently has the metabolism of 1,000 burning suns. The locals out here actually have such a fear of Hi-Hat and what he would do with their children that they used to hang up large chunks of meat in the woods pretty far from their homes in hopes of steering the creature far, far away from their villages, their homes, and of course, their young ones. I bet you're dying to know where you can head and meet old Hi-Hat here, aren't you? Well, you're in luck then. Hi-Hat doesn't seem like he's cut out for the bright lights and glitz of New York City. So, if you want Hi-Hat, you head to where the air is fresh, and the only stench that you smell is old Hi-Hat himself. You should be heading to Western New York. It's reported that old Mr. Hat doesn't stray too far from water. He's been spotted near swampy marshland or often near the Allegheny River as well. So those are two places you can search for him if you really want to. There was one story of a young man who was walking home from a school dance one evening. A teacher told him to go straight home as there was no good that he could get up to out in the woods, and he did exactly that. His easiest path, however, took him near the train tracks, and while near those tracks, he noticed a tall, dark man standing on the tracks. The boy noticed that the man was wearing what looked like a tall stovepipe hat. The man didn't move, but he just stood there, of course, motionless. The boy crept closer a tiny bit and the man turned and growled at the young boy. Well, little fella uses better judgment and he got the heck out of there. This is the closest encounter that I could find with Hi-Hat, but there are a fair amount of stories that have Hi-Hat being spotted in the distance, recognizable obviously by his menacing eyes, sharp, crooked teeth, and his, well, his Hi-Hat. There were some vague encounters where people saw him near swamps and along the shores of the local waterways. In the 1960s, there was a controversial dam built on the Allegheny River in the heart of Seneca country. A huge relocation problem was set in place for the Seneca people, as well as a rather large power company having to move their plant as well. During the relocation, they had to clear some forest in order to run some power lines, and while they were working in one of the swampy areas, the workers there used to notice a tall man standing in the distance wearing a stovepipe hat just watching them. They apparently saw this man so often that they ended up naming him Abe Lincoln. And each day they would talk about whether or not they saw old Abe that day. The last such sighting of old Hi-Hat came in about 1970. As the crew was finishing up, they noticed the creature that they had become familiar with standing atop a beaver dam, just watching them. After that, Hi-Hat seems to have vanished. Maybe there have been other encounters of him out there, but just nothing reported. Hi-Hat is a rather interesting creature, monster? I don't really know. But he doesn't really seem incredibly menacing, even though it's reported, obviously, that he eats little kids. Most of the quote-unquote encounters with him seem to find him standing at a distance, simply watching those that notice him there. Honestly, people say that they can feel him watching them, even if they don't see him. Those in the area know that he's there and can feel his eyes staring at them from beneath the brim of his top hat. But what is Hi-Hat? There aren't a whole lot of theories about Hi-Hat. A lot of folks simply regard him as a legend or a piece of lore. It's thought that perhaps Hi-Hat was once a witch, but after perishing, roams the woods as an unforgiving spirit. Minus that he seems kind of forgiving, so a shrug, I don't know. Another theory regarding Hi-Hat is that he's simply just another bipedal primate. Either simply a form of Bigfoot or kind of like one of his cousins. Well, what about the hat, you say? It's been hypothesized by some, mostly probably wrong, that it's just a deformity in the creature's head. Sure, why not, right? I mean, sometimes people's heads look like hats. There's also kind of the theory that it's just kind of a piece of lore that was meant to keep kids from wandering too far out of their villages, so that's always a possibility as well. But there is no definitive answer to what Hi-Hat is, but to those that have had encounters, you're not going to say it's a figment of their imagination. Once again, why ruin a good thing, right? Much like Vermont, Champ isn't the only creature that calls the lakes of the Northeast home. New York is absolutely no different. While they can claim part guardianship of Champ, they also have a few different lakes that have inhabitants of their own. This week's aquatic ambassador is none other than the Seneca Lake Serpent. Seneca Lake is yet another gorgeous spot that the Northeast bolsters. It's a glacial lake that was carved out around 2 million years ago when a large glacier trucked along the Northeast. Seneca Lake is the largest of the Finger Lakes of upstate New York, and it has a surface area of just under 70 square miles. Like, just under. For comparison, Loch Ness covers about 22 square miles, so that tells you about how big it is. Not to mention that Seneca Lake stretches 38 miles from stem to stern, and it has a maximum depth of 618 feet. It's a pretty big lake. It's fed by underground springs which keep it moving during the winter, so the lake doesn't really get a chance to freeze. Some of the local tribes even believed that the lake had no bottom, and beneath the lake lived a super moody lake monster. I mean, this really is the ideal location for a lake monster to call home, don't you think? Well, the Seneca Lake Serpent surely does himself. Let's talk about this fella's debut. On a beautiful July evening in 1899, the sidewheeler steamship, the Otentiani, was cruising along Seneca Lake. The lake was calm and smooth as glass. In the distance, the passengers and the ship's captain, Captain Herendeen, noticed something large floating in the water. After grabbing his looky glass, he decided that it was more than likely an overturned boat. The captain ordered the engine room to head in that direction as he had hoped he'd be able to find survivors. As the boat approached, they slowed down and started to lower the lifeboats in order to make sure that if there was any survivors, that they could be rescued, or if they could find any bodies in the water, that they could recover them. When lowering the boats, what was thought to be another overturned boat simply turned and started to move away from the steamship. The captain ordered the engine room, "Dial up the speed and catch that boat." However, as the ship gained speed, the object did something that no one on the boat would probably ever forget. The boat turned. Not the steamship, the boat in the water. Well, its head turned and then proceeded to lift out of the water. It looked in the general direction of the ship and it opened its mouth, displaying two rows of pearly white, probably razor-sharp teeth. One of the passengers on the ship was a geologist, and he explained the creature as so, and I quote, "Its head was perhaps 4 feet long and triangular in shape. Its mouth was very long and armed with two rows of triangular white teeth, as sharp as those of a shark, but in shape more like those of a sperm whale. The body was covered with a horny substance that was as much like the carapace of a terrapin as anything I know. The horny substance was brown in color and of a greenish tinge. The belly of the creature was cream white. Its eyes were round like those of a fish, and it did not wink." Sounds pretty fun, eh? Much like many of the other red-blooded Americans in our stories, the captain decided that the best recourse here was to ram and kill the creature, and just that he did. They hit the creature and they ended up breaking its spine, killing it. The passengers and crew decided that they had to bring this thing back to shore so that they could show everybody, because they didn't think anyone would believe them. They pulled up alongside the dead creature and proceeded to attempt to raise it up onto the ship. Unfortunately, civilians rarely know how to tie them good knots, and the rope around the creature's tail ended up slipping off. With the weight of the monster, it ended up just slipping down into the abyss of the lake, never to be seen again. On that boat, too, were quite a few reputable people. It wasn't just some locals out on a boat with some shine dropping dynamite in the lake to see what they could come up with. We're talking a sheriff, a bunch of educated folk, the geologist that saw this creature and described it so well. There were some very respectable folks that wouldn't have been questioned much in terms of anything else that they had witnessed. Guess what, though? They obviously were questioned quite a bit, and some folks even suggested that maybe the people out on the boat may have partaken too much in the drink while aboard said ship. That's just rude. Jeez. Anyway, that's kind of a big sighting. It's not like one or two people kind of saw it. A whole dang boat full of people who were very well respected saw it. That's crazy. Throughout the years, there have been sightings of the lake monster in Seneca Lake, and a lot of folks have claimed to see it floating along, and there's even a picture or two out there of the supposed lake monster. There's one in particular that shows these three distinct sections of the creature that kind of look like they may be scaly in nature. There are some other pictures out there too, but some of these may do more harm than good. But there are definitely pictures of this in particular supposed lake monster. But is it real? Maybe. A lot of folks seem to believe that this thing is no more than just a lake sturgeon. Whenever a lake monster of sorts seems to pop up, it seems that the best explanation is a lake sturgeon. Is there a chance that it might be? Or perhaps it's a group of them? Absolutely. But is it plausible that something else calls this lake home? Close by, there's Cayuga Lake, which also has its own lake monster. Some people believe that there are pathways underground that connect the two lakes, and maybe these monsters are one and the same. Or maybe there's a few of them that hang out. I don't really know. I did also see an interesting theory, though, that points out that the sightings of this creature, and creatures, the Cayuga Lake one as well, seem to have started around the completion of the Erie Canal, which connects Seneca Lake and Cayuga Lake to the Atlantic Ocean through a variety of locks and canalways. Maybe this used to be a creature that called the open ocean home that somehow ended up in Seneca Lake or Cayuga Lake. Whatever it is or was, it seems to love upstate New York. Have you ever watched the movie The Blob? As a kid, that movie scared the absolute crud out of me. The way it was colored and how it moved and it just absorbed everything terrified me. We had some really amazing family friends that used to make their own jam, and of course, because they're great friends of ours, they gave us some. I'm not sure if my mom was messing with me or whatnot, but one day I opened the cupboard and saw this giant vat of blobular-looking stuff. The color, the consistency, it was spot on. Ugh. Once I recovered from that, my mom thought it would be funny to leave blob-colored slime on the floor near my closet door so it looked like it was seeping out. As a 6 or 7 year old kid, that's not fun to see. At all. I slept on the couch for like 2 nights, and I wouldn't go in my room to change. Thanks, Mom. Huh. You know, I'm sorry, I get it. What the hey does this have to do with cryptids? Am I turning into Barry? Absolutely not. However, our next cryptid has something in common with this story. Well, kind of. We will continue to work our way east as we head from Seneca Lake to a sleepy little village on the New York-Connecticut border. Our next friend takes us to Kinderhook, New York, in search of the Kinderhook Blob. See? The connection to my story wasn't in vain. Booyah! However, something that may be in vain is trying to explain to you just what the Kinderhook Blob looks like. No, not because no one has ever really seen it or given a good description, but because, well, it's a blob. Through some of the encounters with this object, or creature, rather, there's some description of it. It's pretty basic, really. It's a white, amorphous blob that seems to just float through space. Sounds like a lot of fun, actually. I feel like if this thing showed up in my backyard, my girls would probably grab it, dress it up a little bit, and stretch it for like 2 to 3 counties. However, when some of the folks that have encountered this thing have had encounters with it, they haven't thought about anything other than fleeing and getting the heck away. Our first instance of the Kinderhook blob making an appearance was in 1962 in, of course, Kinderhook, New York. A 10-year-old boy and his 7-year-old cousin were playing in the woods behind their house. Of course, it's the woods. Where else do creepy things show up? As they were playing, they heard this crazy high-pitched sound, kind of like this. Yeah, I'm just joking. The boys had no idea where the sound was coming from, so of course, like boys, they searched the tree line around where they were playing, and sure enough, there it was. Standing there, up there, floating. Behind a tree was this white, blob-like creature that was just watching them. Actually, it wasn't really watching them, I guess, as the blob had no eyes. Rather, the boys said they kind of felt like he was just peering at them through the trees. Smartly enough, they bounced. The next encounter happened a few years later when a man was hiking through the woods. Again, the woods. While hiking, he saw a big white blob gliding down the hill towards him. Apparently, he suddenly became an Olympic athlete and he jumped over a rather sizable pond on his way out of there. Eventually, this guy built up some nerve and returned to the scene with a friend of his. They weren't unprepared this time, though. They had a pitchfork and a shovel, and they were ready to take on old Bobby. They had a pitchfork and a shovel, and they were ready to take on old Blobby Flay here. When they got to the approximate spot, they were ready for it. Of course, not very long after arriving, our old friend Blobby made an appearance. The man that had the original run-in saw his friend turn white as, well, a blob, and point to the creature as he could see it. Coming at them through the trees was Blobby. The men suddenly lost their nerve and decided, you know, we're just going to have a foot race to see who the heck could get out of here first. You'd think that after seeing Blobby just once, you'd be pretty content not to see him again, right? There's another very well-documented encounter with Blobby Flay, but there's some questions surrounding this one. The question being, it either happened in 1964 or perhaps 1978. Either way, these two dudes named Barry Scott and Russell Lee were camping out in the woods. I've done it many times in upstate New York, and it's absolutely amazing and gorgeous. Unfortunately for these boys, they weren't alone. They heard something come tromping down the hill outside of their tent. Not sure how a blob that flies can tromp, but these boys seemed set that they heard something coming down that hill. No matter what, they saw a white, ghostly figure coming down the hill towards their tent. Bobby described it as being bell-shaped, but Russell said that he believed it was the Virgin Mary. I guess I can see how Russell would think that, though, if you think about it. If you think about most sightings of the Virgin Mary, she's wearing a long, flowing dress that would give her kind of a bell shape. Whether it was the Virgin Mary or Blobby Flay, it's hard to tell. The boys saw something that they both described fairly similarly. This one is also really difficult to decipher. What exactly is this thing? There really is no hard evidence as to what this creature is. No pictures, no sketches. It's really difficult to classify this thing as anything really because we have no idea what it is. It could be a ghost or a wraith or even maybe an alien. We just don't know. Obviously, what we do know is that, as always, all of these people saw something out there that left an indelible mark on them. If you've ever had an encounter with anything like this, you understand. You remember it. Since 1964 or 1978 or whenever, there haven't been any reported sightings of the Kinderhook blob. That leads many to believe that it was definitely just a hoax. It's just a story perpetrated to get your name in the paper and put your town on the map. One theory that I saw from the Cryptopia fellas is that perhaps this is some sort of legitimate creature. Maybe it has a long hibernation cycle that it rests in and then comes out for a short period of time. Or again, you know, perhaps it's nothing. Maybe just a ghost. I have no idea what the Kinderhook blob is. But what about you? What do you think? You have an idea? I am dying to hear what you think, as I have absolutely no clue. What I do know, though, is that leads us back to right here, right now. Sitting outside in the beautiful night, watching the stars, and waiting to see if anyone or anything wanders its way to Old Winnie here. Another week, another set of awesome cryptids, legends, and lore, and another fantastic night. I adore having you all with me on these trips, and I encourage you, if you know of a monster in your state or any of their friends, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm pretty easy to find. If you head to Twitter, you can find us at MNFpod. You can check out our Instagram at Monsters and Friends, or ask your mom to take you on Facebook. Just search out Monsters and Friends Podcast, and there we be. As usual, I'll make sure to link everything in the show description that you'll find right down under here. You can't see it, but I'm pointing below me. If you want to hear about a monster or a legend in your state that we haven't visited yet, let me know. And again, if you have another one somewhere that we've already been, tell me about that one too, and we can definitely share it on our special listener show. Most importantly, though, please make sure that you spread the love. Head on over to wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be Apple Podcasts, RIP iTunes, Google Play, Mad Max's Music and Podcasting Downloader app, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast and please tell your friends. Ratings and reviews are awesome, but they don't get the show moving up the charts. Of course, I'll always encourage you to leave a rating and review, but subscribing is the best way to help out. I want you to tell a friend and tell them to tell two friends and then tell them to tell two friends and so on and so forth. Party on, Wayne. Party on, Garth. Most of you probably don't understand that, but lastly, I want to make sure you check out straightupstrange.com or give @strangepodcast on Twitter a follow and see what else this awesome network has to offer. Thank you all so very much for stopping by Old Winnie here to see me and visit with our monsters and their friends for just a short while. It's been real, and we'll chat again real soon.